This is ARRL's Eclectic Tech, a bi-weekly look at the technical and scientific side of amateur radio with your host Steve Ford, WB8IMY. Eclectic Tech is brought to you by ICOM. ICOM, for the love of ham radio, is about the passion for an incredible hobby. Visit ICOM in the community webpage at www.icomamerica.com/community.
I'm speaking this morning with Sal DeFrancesco, K1RGO. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning.
Sal has an article in the February issue of QST Magazine in which he describes the construction of a 630-meter receiving loop. Is that correct, Sal?
That's correct.
And the loop itself, when I saw the article, it looks beautiful. You did a magnificent job of it. And again, this is just a receiving loop, but can you roughly detail how you did this?
Well, the original loop goes back to 2007, and it was part of my niche business that I had for about, I don't know how many years, 35 years. It was for alien science and for homeland security. It was supposed to be two of these loops made for the DGPS, and it worked out quite well. And, we kind of marketed it, and that was it. And then I left the coil itself with RG58 just hanging around for years and years. And I said, well, you know, I'm getting back on 630 now that we're all got the band and everything. And I said, let me see how it'll work. And it worked fantastic. I had to modify it. And it worked pretty good. Little changes here and there on the preamp. And it was very good at knowing noise, and had plenty of gain, and kind of used that among the other antennas. And it's probably my favorite antenna for the band.
Now, I was noticing in the article also that you, and I probably get this wrong, Sal, but you built the loop out of RG-174 coaxial cable, is that right?
Yeah.
And how did you do that? Was it like 12? I saw the number 12 in the loops. Did you just loop it round and round?
Yeah, 12 turns about approximately an 8-inch diameter. I got an old tail there that I used for, and I marked it off there, an old, trash pail that you use in the bathroom. That was my form. And it worked out quite well. And that's what I did, put it there, and then we split in the center halfway through, and then we got a balanced loop.
And are you using a balun to feed the antenna to your amplifier circuitry?
Yeah.
And that's what, a 1-to-1 balun?
Yeah, 1-to-1.
And your amplifier is, it looked relatively small. Is it like a 2-stage FET, or how did you do that?
Yeah, it's an FET. I use a J113. I get a little more gain. You could probably use a FEF-102 or some of the standard stuff. But that's what I used in there, and that worked out quite well. And then we just match it to the MOSFET and the output, and get the MOSFET feeding the 50 ohms.
And you designed this yourself, correct?
Yeah.
The antenna itself, like I said, looks beautiful. It's this black ring. That's what it appears to be. Looks like it would blend in well.
Yeah, it works out quite well. The original setup was all totally enclosed with a single. You didn't see the little box in there. Everything was right within the pipe itself. It was really unique, and it was difficult if you had a problem. But that was the original design. Forgot what we called it. RL something or other. I don't know. But anyway, that was the original one.
And I have to ask the obvious question. How well does it work?
Quite well. I had some crud here, a lot of noise. And I just took it very carefully and narrowly, nulled it out. And I was able, luckily it was in the southwest position where I work most of my stations, but it nulled it right out and I could operate. Otherwise, I'd have problems. But I got to experiment, put it outside. I could put it in different spots. And I have other antennas that I use, whether they have a noise nulling circuit. And I have a couple of active antennas and one that's loosely coupled to the loading coil for 630 meters. And I feed that into the For receiving also, that's an alternative method. Or I can also take my loop and do the same thing and use noise nulling. But it appears like I don't really need it because the loop itself can null it.
Noise is a serious problem on 630 meters, isn't it?
Yeah, big time. It was pretty good here. I don't know, we're doing a lot of these smart meters and crud coming out. It's really a pain. Even 160 is a problem. Whatever they're doing here, I don't know. A lot of smart meters.
For listeners who may not be familiar with how you're using it, I take it you're turning the loop until you get the minimal amount of noise in the direction that you want?
Yeah. Or I can peak it, too, depending on the conditions. If there's not much noise around, I'll peak it. It's a little broader on the peak. But, I null. When there's noise, I just null it. And the station I'm listening to works out quite well. I noticed this works a lot better up north. This WA1JAS up in Maine that I compared it to my other antenna, and it seems to be superior by a few S units just using this antenna for some reason or other. That's what I did notice on it.
I noticed on your QRZ page that you've also built a transverter to generate RF on 630?
Yeah, my own design. I also built a beacon. I have a beacon that I made there. It's a divide by four with a super stable 160 meter oscillator VFO, and I take that and I divide down and I key that with my little another design with a CMOS for a matrix ID of my call letters, and that's what I use with that.
How many watts output are you getting from the transverter?
Well, what I do is I run the FTDX1200 into it, and I run it all the way down to 5 watts, and I have attenuation going in. What's coming out is Class D. I only run CW or QRSS. That's basically all I run. That's all you can run down there anyway, unless you want to do FT8 and all that, but that's what I prefer. So you get about a half a watt out, and that half a watt goes into a PA, which is a Class C. It's very efficient, and then I have that to set up, remotely in the with a nice navy coil, and I just get a little bit of ferrite to tune it. Don't really need much else, and it comes right in there and loads up the 160 meter inverted V, and that's what I use.
Wow! And how have you done with it? I mean, what would be your best DX, if I can call it that, so far?
Well, I did not make the full contact, but what's that? I'm trying to remember its call here. KV5NJD, I think, out in Texas. He did copy me. I was made contacts out in Tennessee. EJQ there. He isn't on anymore. He had a nice signal. I think he took an old Ranger. I don't know what he did, but he had a nice signal. Anyway, out there, and there's a bunch of stations that work out near North Carolina, and up to Maine, and then lately not too much out to the Midwest, but I used to work K9KFR and NIRU and a bunch of those stations there.
That's great for 630 meters. That's a challenging band, to say the least.
Oh, it is. QSB. That's all you get is QSB. I know, you got to like the band. It gets frustrating, but you got to like the band. We're in the middle of the queue, so you drop right out. And if you have the patience to wait, if not, you get them later on. It's crazy, but it's a bunch of guys. W3, TS is another diehard there. Mike, I get on with him. There's another guy, too. They were running the 100th century there. They're trying to run to see if they can work across the ocean there.
Oh, yes. The transatlantic test, yes.
Yeah, and they were doing that on there. I didn't manage to get in, but I guess they didn't have any success, but they had like a little party there, and they had a little arrangement with a few of the guys that were trying to listen in to some of the Europeans there.
You mentioned that you often use QRSS, and I've discussed that on the podcast in the past, but for listeners who may not be familiar, I tend to define QRSS as just extremely slow CW. Is that accurate?
Yeah. What I do is run QRSS 7 on 630. And I did run it as a beacon, and I did, I do have the software, the Argo and the Spectran software for that. And, it's more popular in Europe, and it's not really that popular here. But, I also use a QRSS 32nd dot on, the 1750 meter band. We run some experiments on the LWCA there. And I'll run that now and then, and they'll give a listen. That's very, very slow, and it made it out there to Kansas, so with micro power. And then we could play around too with the other band there, the 13.56, you know, 5 milliwatt,
yes,
dipole stuff. Yeah, we got I send the H there, and yeah, it's amazing what we did. One time in must have been just perfect. In 2012, I don't remember the exact date, it was a VK, I forgot his call there, but he did copy our signals there in VK land there in New South Wales.
So wow.
It's amazing what you can do down there. I got that on the QRZ page, I put that on there.
Do you plan to try 220 meters at some point?
Oh, you mean 2200?
Or 2200, yes.
Not really, it is impractical. Too bad they didn't have 1750 meters.
Yes.
Because I've been playing on that. I know that quite now. Very noisy here and impractical. I mean, I need a lot more room, and nah, I have no interest. 630 is about it, and then the other bands, you know. Looks like the sunspots are coming back, so I'm getting more interested in the higher band. 17 meters looks good.
Lately. Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
We had a solar flux index the other day that peaked over 140, and even 10 meters was wide open.
Wow. Yeah, I got to spend more time on 10. 10 seems dead most of the time.
That's true.
I do have a 10-meter beacon that I run, but I don't know. I'm just listening and see if there's E-skip or whatever, and if I hear some activity, then I'll throw my beacon on. But otherwise, it's frustrating.
Well, Sal, thank you for taking the time to put that article together for QST. I think a lot of readers will enjoy it, and perhaps it'll give some the inspiration to build that loop themselves and try to get more signals on 630 meters.
Yeah, I'm trying to get some activity down there. If we can get some more locally, and like in the past there, we used to get a lot of locals on the 1750, and we used to have a blast. This goes back in the late 70s and 80s, and we used to I have quite a few in each state in the tri-state area, and we'd have a lot of fun. So that would help there, you know, with the shorter skip there and all that. But right now, there's, you know, I guess they have to build their equipment, you know, the transverter. I don't know. I was thinking either maybe I can, depending on how lazy I am or if I got the strength, maybe putting in the transverter and the PA. And my noise nuller, and I also have a counterpoise that I use to help my ground out on 630 meters. I have an electric fence, and I resonate it, and I bring up about another 10% increase in antenna current. That's another experiment.
That's excellent.
Yeah, so that might be something else as an article. I got a few ideas, but
by all means, writing is not easy, but
no, not at all. I wrote for Ham Radio Magazine, CQ Magazine in the past, and I don't know, that was in the past. I forgot how it was. This was a little more involved, I guess. I got a little more details.
True.
For QST.
Well, thank you again for your time, Sal, and enjoy yourself. Maybe I'll hear you on 6:30 at some point.
Okay, good enough.
What's the password for your ARRL Logbook of the World account? How about your online bank account? Well, if you can rattle off these passwords using only your memory, you either have a remarkable memory or you're using passwords that are easy to remember, like the name of your dog or the year he was born. Well, the majority of people use the latter approach. They make up simple passwords that relate to some aspect of their lives and are easy to remember. In many instances, they use these same passwords on several different accounts, which is a major no-no. Security experts have long despised passwords. After all, they're hackable, forgettable, and sometimes even guessable.
As companies like Microsoft and Google move toward embracing passwordless logins, there's a company called Yubico that thinks that it has the key, pun intended, to make things much simpler. They've rolled out a new product called the YubiKey Bio, and it's the company's first hardware security key to offer fingerprint logins. These new keys are designed for use with PCs and laptops primarily. Each key has a built-in fingerprint reader, so you can log into a site with the tap of a finger instead of having to remember your password. The key could also serve as a form of two-factor authentication if you needed it. A loop on the top of each YubiKey Bio makes it into a keychain, really, so you never have to leave home without it. Just attach your keys to it. Additionally, the injection molded frame, they say, is supposed to be crush resistant and water resistant. These keys don't have any drivers, batteries, or other software, but you can add or delete fingerprints to the hardware via an app that Yubico has made for Windows, macOS, and Linux. Once you have a key programmed with your fingerprint, you can plug it into the computer of your choice, go to your desired web page, such as your online bank account, and then log in with just a tap of your finger. The keys work with popular operating systems, including Windows, as I said, macOS, Linux, and Chrome OS, and with browsers based on Chromium, and that would include Google Chrome, of course, and Microsoft Edge. I've yet to try a YubiKey Bio, but they certainly look intriguing. They are a little pricey at $85 for the USB-C version and $80 for the USB-A model, but when you consider the level of security and convenience, it might be worthwhile. When I recorded this episode, the keys were only available from Yubi at www.yubico.com, but I imagine they'll soon be available from other sources. And my guess is that you'll see more of these types of devices in the very near future. Microsoft, for example, wants to phase out the use of passwords, and earlier last year, Google shared its plans to eradicate passwords entirely. In fact, Google said it would make two-factor authentication mandatory on 150 million accounts.
Tune in again for the next episode of Eclectic Tech, produced by ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. Music is provided by Purple Planet at purpleplanet.com. If you have comments, email eclectic@arrl.org. This episode is copyright ARRL and all rights are reserved. I'm Sabrina Jackson, KC1JMW. See you next time.